This is Melissa, and it is the 22nd day of March, 2026, and I hope you're all doing really well. I don't want to talk too long today because I've got a little window here, I think, before the air conditioner will come back on. I've got it turned up, but it's really, really hot outside, and if I keep it turned up too long, the element freezes. Don't ask me why, but it freezes when you turn it back on, and it has to work too hard. And so it's that time of the year where it starts getting really hot here in Texas. And it's the inverse of being in Canada where you had 6 or 8 months of winter. It's 6 or 8 months of really hot summer. So other than it being hot, I had quite a good week. I got to talk to a lot of people, and that was nice. There were a few days there where I was just talking to people all day long. And very interesting to hear where people's heads are, what's good, what's going well in their lives, what they're concerned about, what they're looking to change and do differently. And one of the themes of several of the conversations was community. People who were in some kind of a community, but it wasn't going how they hoped, or people who were looking for like-minded people to do some kind of community endeavor with. And that's challenging. I know that is. And then I had another conversation with someone who I don't want to say too much of her ideas in case she wants to use them for something. But we were talking about intentional community, which was kind of a new expression for me. And the person that I was speaking with was Petra Buskins, and I've talked with her before on Real History. And in her sociology studies, she was very familiar with Amitai Etzioni, who I mentioned last week regarding communitarianism. And she said, Petra said, you know, there really, I think there's only the true community is family. It's blood and marriage, and everything else seems destined for some kind of failure, the, you know, utopias that fail. But I think because this is such a driving force for people, particularly when something happened to undermine the family, and this happens in a variety of ways. I think most recently, a lot of you experienced this during and after COVID, where it became clear that you had very different ways of seeing the world. So, yes, the idea, and I said to Petra, he was talking about intentional community, and I didn't really know what he was talking about. Now, of course, the man that I was conversing with told me exactly what it was, that, and evidently you can just go online and type in intentional community, and then the sky's the limit. You know, is your chief interest gardening? Is it some kind of religion? Well, you can find a community and pitch in together. So that's interesting. I have myself found that very challenging. I mean, I'm here with family now, but this is after many years of being an individual and an adult and making my way in the world. And so there are certain compromises, and one of them is being sure, being certain, being very careful that I keep a lot of my opinions and thoughts and ideas to myself, because it's pointless. So that, though, is a challenge. And I think that one of the things that people do, whether it's after 9/11 or after something like COVID, is they look for like-minded people. Now, they may not be thinking, oh, I want a physical community where I can pitch my tent next to, you know, other people who think like I do. But you have this online in the digital world, and many of you have been around for a long time, and you've been listening to what they called Patriot Radio or Truther Radio, so you know that it can be comforting to you to think that there are other people out there who are thinking about some of the same things that you're thinking about. What I have discovered for myself, though, is that there are very few people out there who are thinking like I do. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think that this is the road of an individual. And I think that that is ultimately a free road. It is where freedom can be found. But the inclination, partly because humans, they tell us, are social creatures, we look to meet or mate or be with people that we think are like us. So I want to talk about maybe some of the problems or downsides or even just precautions of seeking that kind of intentional community in the voices and information that you take on when you listen to the internet or internet radio or you go on to social media of some sort or the other. So what I'm going to talk about just briefly is the idea of inside baseball. Now, I've touched on this a little bit before, but I babbled on for 2 or 3 minutes about so-and-so said this, and then so-and-so responded, and then so-and-so got angry, and the so-and-so fired back. And what I was demonstrating was how quickly consensus, that necessary consensus to community, how quickly that disintegrates. And if you have, and I think, you know, wrongly put a label on yourself and said, well, we're 9/11 truthers or we're, you know, COVID freedom or, you know, if you've put that label on yourself, then you've made an awful lot of assumptions about the people that you are meeting with, talking with, protesting with, activisming with. And so I'm going to mention just something really quickly. I did a real history, I think it's been a couple of years now, with David A. Hughes, and he was a historian. He is a historian. And he was talking about a lot of interesting things. He began to look around and see the signs of totalitarianism quite quickly during COVID. And so he wrote about it and he spoke about it, and I had him on as a guest on Real History. Now, I subscribe to a lot of people's newsletters and updates, and I subscribe to people that I have nothing in common with, whose worldview I don't like, but I do appreciate having as many points of view as I can access. Not that I look at it every day, not that I look at it once a week, but just, you know, pop in now and again and see what people think, what they're saying. And I noticed a few weeks ago that he had published a series about why Rainer Fulmich deserved to have been imprisoned. I read the first piece, and then I kind of scanned the second, and I didn't read the rest of the series simply because of time constraints. But I did notice that in one of the articles that he wrote, he described that he had had, that there had been a fallout because of what he'd written about Rainer Fulmich. Now, I want to say right up front, I don't have a dog in the fight, as they say. I know who David Hughes is. I've spoken with him. I know who Rainer Fulmich is. I know what he did during COVID. I know that he is in prison. I know that I have listeners who appreciate his work very much. But I have not followed him. I think I've seen one or two things that he's done. And so that's what I'm saying. I have no idea if he is in prison deservedly or not, although I've heard from many listeners and others that no, he doesn't deserve to be there. But as I say, I don't know him. I don't know the ins and outs of the case. But David Hughes was writing to demonstrate that he did deserve to be imprisoned. Now, David Hughes had gotten involved in different panel discussions with various people, including some of his longer standing colleagues that he's worked with, and I don't have their names at the top of my head, but most recently he's been involved in talking on panels with Courtney Turner and Patrick Wood. Patrick Wood wrote a book called Technocracy Rising, and he's had a website for years. I think it's called Technocracy News, and I've linked to it, and Alan has linked to it. So the technocratic control of humans is Patrick Wood's area of expertise, where we're headed, technocracy, where we are, really. But Patrick Wood removed himself from the panel with David Hughes, said that he was no longer going to participate in that, and so he defended Rainer Fulmich and said, "Rainer, he's a gentle and kind man, and I have worked with him and enjoyed him." And at a scan, I could see that David Hughes said, "Well, okay, he's a kind and gentle man, but does that make what I'm writing wrong?" And he said, "Are you going to sacrifice truth for the relationship?" And so I'm demonstrating inside baseball, because Alan Watt was very aware of the world out there that he stepped into the moment that he started talking publicly. He started out talking with Jackie Petru, and then he went on many shows, and that brings you into an orbit, into a sphere, and then people, you know, expect you to know what so-and-so said, and if you go on so-and-so show or you talk to so-and-so, then you must be like them, and so you're tarred with the same brush, etc. But David Hughes made a good point. Do you sacrifice truth for your friendship? And there seems to be something in the collective mind, in the group, where you want to be popular, you want to be accepted by the group, and the group says, this is who we talk to. We talk to other people who are in the so-called truth movement, and we talk to whistleblowers, and we talk to people who have, you know, carved out a niche in this world. And then, you know, so, and what that looks like to people who are listening or reading or participating as an audience, it looks like consensus. But the reason that this came into my mind recently is because I don't have that. I don't have consensus. Very often I find that what I think or that my point of view is quite unpopular. It's not like anyone else's. It's not like some people who say that they are truthers. So I just have to keep going my own way. And the lines seem to be, well, the lines are drawn, and the grooves that the lines were, that are now grooves, that are almost chasms, like the Grand Canyon, are being hacked out. And that's not a world I'm interested in. I'm really not interested in inside baseball. I don't have a lot of time to follow. Now, I will admit that I kind of fell victim myself to this in the early days, months, and, you know, a stretch of time after Alan passed away, that I had to suss things and people out for myself. And my gut reaction to certain speakers would say, oh, they're controlled opposition, they're, you know, they're, this is a disinfo agent, or, you know, so you've got your sense. And I found myself going down there and looking at connections. Oh, they're backed by such and such. And who is this group of people? And they seem to be funding them. And there are people who do that, and they do that quite well, this exposing these kind of connections amongst other truthers. But for me, the question is, are you going to do that, or are you going to do your thing? And I prefer to do my thing, whatever my thing is, which kind of morphs all the time according to my following of my interests and what I think is important to be looking at. So I think in a way I'm describing like a ghetto, a truth ghetto, social media ghettos where people go and they say things and little echo chambers are created. And the other thing besides community and how hard it is to have true community or true tribe, if you will, a term that I've used before, but found, you know, that yes, this is actually very difficult. The other element that seems to be so much at play right now is religion. And I think that this is on purpose, very much on purpose, so that we can see that what is playing out in the Middle East, for instance, is part of this. And I receive things, I mean, if I read some of my emails, which I wouldn't because I wouldn't have to ask people, is it okay if I read your email? Is it okay if I share some of this? But it's literally a cacophony at times of different religious points of view or anti-religious points of view about what's going on. And I don't just have people who communicate with me who are not religious or who are Christian, but there are Buddhists and atheists and religiously atheist and Muslims, and they all have very strong points of view, especially about what's playing out right now. And the overarching sentiment is that you don't get to sit this out. In other words, it's that religious war kind of rhetoric, and of course I don't like that. So in this talk that I've chosen to go up today, Alan Watt talked about you'll see soon enough why I chose it. So I'll just read the poem, and then I think those of you who listen to my real histories will understand. This is an RBN talk from April 11, 2013. Not Allowed, Defiance to Neuroscience. As your nerves get frayed, almost raw, realities to be redefined via neurolaw. Pre-crime predictions, psychoactive drugs will be prescribed to potential young thugs. You see, none of you are what you think. Run by chemicals, synapses, makes you blink. You're the end product of competing cells, electrical transmitters. Neuroscience tells you've no free will. Behavior, predictable. You're all capable of doing the unthinkable, but hail genetics, neuroscience, the savior. By selecting genes, they'll perfect nature. Removing wrong genes, in vitro fertilization. Move over, God. Science will save civilization. So I did have a conversation with a neuroscientist on Real History this past week, a neuroscientist by the name of James Giordano, and I hope to have a follow-up, and I've been listening to a lot of other neuroscientists with different spins and different ideas, and I think I may reach out to some of them and maybe some people in the AI world. It's, maybe part of it is keep your friends close and, you know, the rest of that one. But I was able to briefly touch on with Dr. Giordano free will. And he said perhaps, you know, we may not have free will. We may have free won't. And I think it's interesting to be able to pull out how they say these things, why they say them. Obviously, they don't say them because Alan Watts said they were going to say them. They say this because it is the mindset when science is in charge. In preparing for that conversation, I read a paper that Dr. Giordano had co-written called A Principled and Cosmopolitan Neuroethics, Considerations for International Relevance. And this was written in 2014, so it's already a dozen years old. And I'm just starting in the middle of nowhere here, but they wrote, only where there is wide agreement on priorities would we expect to see somewhat easier convergence on accepting some change in views of the human being, society, and culture, and the use of new technologies. Specifically, a society will more quickly and compliantly accept new life technologies when that society is already highly committed to some important goals, such as lifespan extension, mental health, or crime prevention. And of course, I wrote in the margin there, precogs from the movie Minority Report, dealing with crime precognitively. Alan Watt had several things that set him aside from other people, and one of them was that he believed that there were three levels of science. There was the lower level, the research, where something that had already been searched out is researched again. And then you had your level above that, which would be the military and the intelligence agency use, the highest academic level that is aimed at military applications. And then, of course, you had a level above that. And I think he may have even shared about the morning that he got up and there was someone at the door with a little egg on his beard still from his early breakfast, who had driven up, a Harvard professor who had driven through the night to be there to tell Alan, you're right, and I've seen the archives. I know there's three levels. I've had a glimpse of this, and I know there's stuff way beyond what we're told is going on. One of the other things that set Alan so far apart from other thinkers and talkers was his conclusion that the world was much older than we're told. And this is from page 5 of the first volume of the Cutting Through books. He wrote, the fact is, there have been many ages, and humanity as we know it has been around for millions of years. That is why the sciences, including language, have been used not to free humanity, but to enslave it. The art of illusion is complete comprehension of how the human mind digests incoming information via the five senses and by deliberate interference. Bring the subject to the desired conclusion. When the subject thinks he has come to his conclusion, then all repetition of similar incoming information is automatically put into storage, bypassing all scrutiny. Faulty conclusions are then passed from parent to child and from generation to generation. This technique of imprisoning the mind was well understood from antiquity. So, I guess I don't play inside baseball really, because I can always return to Alan and I can listen to his talks. And for me, he was singular, and his work is still singular. So I don't really need to keep up with all of the other truthers and patriots and thinkers who are out there, because it is, for me, a very worthwhile shortcut to return to Alan. And I know that I'm getting as close to the truth about what's going on as I can get. It's that simple. I think that part of the reason why people seek community, and this becomes something that can build up into a sense of urgency as people understand what is going on and how bad it looks. I think it's because they want to do something, and they're hoping that in some kind of a formulation of a community, they can do something. They can come together and do something. But unfortunately, it seems to be that it all has to start with the individual. And then I suppose if you're doing something, then someone else in proximity might see it, or, you know, and so you may have that aha moment where you look at each other and say, oh, we see eye to eye, at least here, and perhaps we can do something there. I had an email from Greg Gorsuch, the theologian, and I this is very interesting, but it actually almost merits a conversation with him. And it was a response to the Real History that I did with Nick Hayes, where we covered A Scanner Darkly by Philip K. Dick. And he was talking about the way that Nick and I approached Philip K. Dick's interaction with drugs and the drug society. And Greg Gorsuch wrote that Dick was never able to ground his identity due to what drugs and the drug society does to the people who are involved in it, constantly shifting between societies and thus personalities, too many voices being mixed in with their own to survive each day. Basically, Gorsuch wrote, the slow erosion of personhood, of individuality. And then he went into some very interesting discussions about the individual and how the individual sees himself, separates himself, but I will save that for a conversation with Greg Gorsuch. The reason why I wanted to bring it up, though, is because I think that there is something very similar to the drug society and the drug culture with the truther community. It's actually a very splintered group. What seems cohesive because, oh, we all want truth, is actually many, many personalities with very many agendas. And for instance, here in the truth community, you can find people who once were Christians and now they're pagans, or you can find people who don't want to have anything to do with any kind of religion, or you can find people who are all about religion as long as it's their brand. And the unifying thing is they say they're for truth and freedom, et cetera, et cetera. And you can find people who will tell you that truth and overcoming the system and all this can be done. And they're also going to be hosting a little micro retreat, a little retreat where you can microdose on psilocybin. And then you can, you know, do your inner work then, and you'll just be better functioning people. So what I'm saying regarding the inside baseball world of the so-called truth movement, the so-called dissident movement, is you have faction after faction after faction. People who supposedly came to the truth, and before that they were this, and before that they were this, and before this they were that. And there is no cohesion except they say they're telling you the truth. And so it's really important, I think, to have a grounding in your own individuality, in your own self, and to really know yourself. And that includes the dark stuff. That's the whole of you. So just quickly, yeah, it's still going on in the Middle East. And, you know, Trump says that he's thinking about winding down, but it isn't winding down. And I think another couple thousand troops have been sent over that direction from the U.S. And they're thinking that they might put a couple hundred billion that way. So there's that. Meanwhile, Trump also said that he will have the honor of taking Cuba amid the power blackout that is happening because of the oil blockade that has plunged that country into darkness. And some prison guard or some officer at the jail in New York where Epstein was kept in his last days told an officer of the FBI that he saw some suspicious shredding of documents, bags of documents. And then we've got a meningitis outbreak, and here's a headline for you. Talk about scare tactics. A meningitis outbreak evokes COVID memories at a British campus. I just have to say that this weekend was a big alumni weekend, and I grew up here, and so since I'm here, I went and partook of a little alumni stuff, and it was fun to sit and look at the pictures that they had of your class. And of course, I'm from the olden days, and all the pictures were black and white. And I was with a couple of friends, and we're like, "Oh, look, that's you!" And you know, it's like, "Really? Yeah." And it was fun. You could see your brother. Oh, that's my brother's class. And those are some of the friends. And that's when we all went on that camping trip. And so it was like that. And the school had started in the late 60s. So it just went through time and so forth. But then the last honor class, because they do the honor classes in every 5 years. So the last honor class that they were sharing photos of was from 2021. And it was picture after picture after picture of these high school seniors wearing face masks. And it made me so sad and so angry. I leaned over to my friend and I said, you know, just totally robbed. Here we are looking, picking ourselves and our friends out and looking at the laughs that we were all smiling and laughing and having a great time when somebody took our picture. And here is a whole class of people who graduated in 2021. And when they're looking back in 15, 20 years, if they have that privilege, they're just going to see themselves in a face mask. So sad. So another little quick thing that I've seen a couple of times in different forms, but here's one for you. In Americans for Tax Fairness, U.S. billionaires got $1.5 trillion richer in Trump's first year. So take care. Have a good week. You may not be in a community, intentional or otherwise. I don't know what it is that is going to bring you separation from the mass mind and the mass culture. And I don't know what you're seeking, but I would say that I wish for you that you maybe have a little bit of time this week where you disconnect from the madness of the circus as it is presented to us. Take care.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on 11th of April 2013. For newcomers, make sure you make good use of the website cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Lots of free audios for download. All the sites listed there carry transcripts too for print up in English of many of the talks I've given over the years. And if you go into Alan Watt's sentinel.eu, you can get transcripts in other languages. Remember too that you are the audience that bring me to you, because I don't bring on advertisers as guests. I don't make a business out of this. And I only came out, as I say, because I had so much I had to say that it was time to say it. And I knew what was happening, where it was all going, long before 9/11 happened, in fact. And it had to be said so that people could understand the world direction you were set to go in. We're living through a script, basically, and I go through the history of the big foundations and so on that formed openly, that is, because they'd formed before that in the 1800s under different guises, but in the 20th century, they formed openly as private institutions and foundations, which were tax-free foundations. They hired thousands of think tanks across the planet, still do, and they work with each other. And they each take an aspect of society, and that's their particular area that they cover. Have to change society, guide society through cultural changes into a new type of humanity to suit the leaders, of course, themselves. Have to step up the sciences that come in and be the big boss over everyone, from medicine and psychiatry and so on. And all that's happening today, in fact, as we speak. And of course, to turn things that were called services into authorities, like health services become authorities, things like that. Until basically they can create a new type of society by training us generation by generation, very quickly now, of course, into the society that they want. So it's already happened. And also too, it's to be a post-democratic society, an authoritarian society, and as I say, run by experts and all your betters, in other words, ones above you who get all the big paychecks and work for governments and stuff like that. So, as I say, if you want to keep this going, you can help me by buying the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And you can buy the books and discs by using a personal check from the US still. Or you can use PayPal. Or you can send an international postal money order from the US to Canada. Or you can also send cash. It's up to you. And across the world, Western Union, MoneyGram, and PayPal. And straight donations are awfully welcome in these quantitative easing times, which is just simply inflation, of course, and devaluation of your currency, as it's always been. Because we've been trained now to go into austerity. And, of course, everyone's in on it at the top. You understand, you think of banks as having one function, and banks really are part of the control mechanism on society. It's a big stick, in fact, today, the final big stick for the final push into the new system. It was always designed that way, and they mentioned that 100 years ago, too, the big foundations. At the end, they would use the massive power of the purse, and that's what you have today. And, of course, those big foundations put their own members into government at the top. They put their own bureaucrats in. They become your bureaucrats in your countries across the world. They run the media, like the Royal Institute of International Affairs, CFR, and all the magazines that you read too. And every class is catered to for your own psychological type. So everything has been covered an awful long time ago. And of course, you all get your appropriate standardized education so that whatever is taught has been new. Even if it's opposite of the old normals, they give you a new normal, you'll all believe in it at the same time. And that's how easy it is to control and train society into each step that you have planned for them. Very, very simple. A lot of your stuff is through fiction too. It's a better way actually through fiction because your firewall is down. Back with more after this. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're back cutting through the matrix. And I've mentioned so many times about how we're controlled, how our minds are controlled, because we're all fed the same news and same data. And people who watch television and news all the time are even more controlled because it's done so slickly and you're hypnotized watching that screen. And of course, it's rapid fire, pictures and so on that you get, bits and bytes of information. This sticks in your mind without you reasoning through any of it. It's basically downloading into you. And that's how it works so well for most folk. They never question what they're seeing. They take it as some kind of authoritative truth, as it was coming from government, but in fact it's coming from private corporations that run the media. And years ago, as I've mentioned many times, most folk, even the 1950s, 60s and 70s, were suspicious of media because people had always known that private organizations that ran media always had a different purpose for different political parties and so on. And nothing has changed really. Only there's a greater relationship, I'd say, between government and media today because the boys who put them in, who control the media also control the guys in governments. They put their own guys in from the same organization, the CFR in America, for instance. So anyway, we're always being lied to, of course, and we get these simplistic lies. Remember, propaganda has to be very simplistic, not complicated. And if it's complicated, they can often get caught out, but so they keep it very simple. And so we're given these bits and bytes of information, such as Obama saying that the target specific terrorists, Al-Qaeda members, and of course it's been blown wide open from different articles just recently, that they've been hitting all kinds of people, who are unidentified peoples too. Before, under the law, it's supposed to mean that they would identify the person as a definite threat to America. Well, it's not happening that way. I'll put up some links tonight. One is called Out of Sight, Out of Mind. And I've got a couple other ones to go up as well on the same topic that's disclosed information quite recently to show you that they're blowing all kinds of peoples up. They can't even identify who they are or care for that matter. Not that the public cares either. I don't expect any reaction from it at all. I think everyone's so jaded today they don't really care about things. But I'll put them up anyway at cuttingthroughthematrix.com at the end of this broadcast. And also, too, I mentioned this about a month ago, I think it was, but it's out in the mainstream now. And it says climate change now is included in U.S. science teaching guidelines for the first time. So the indoctrination is starting now to teach the children about climate change. Since they can't get the adults all on board with it, go for the children, brainwash them, give them scary pictures and things and little videos, and they'll believe whatever they're seeing. And it'll work very well. I'll put that up tonight, too. And also, Cyprus suspends the probe, of course they were going to, into who withdrew the money early out of the banks and crashed it. Of course they were going to do that. Can't tell the public who they were. Too many important people. Now, everything is changing, as I've mentioned before, into new normals. And this is not new at all, really. You'll find a lot of this stuff going back to the early 1900s, even before that, like H.G. Wells, when he tried to push what they called free love in the late 1800s. And H.G. Wells went to what's called the Red Tie School. Selected members were picked out of school, put into a special school to become the future guides of humanity by writing articles or books or fiction even. Because most folk follow fiction, that's how their minds are changed. And he had teams working with him all through his life, not just himself, to get all the stuff correct. But he pushed free love, and even in his own particular life, apparently, he had a lot of sexual problems, and they were classified as deviancies. He even made some of his wives sign statements. They never disclosed what exactly he was up to. But anyway, he talked about new normals would be created for the public down the road. They'd abolish all religions eventually. And in his book, you find that Shape of Things to Come, he even had the sort of Air Force and other ones going after the Vatican. And the remaining of the mainers in the Vatican would run to Ireland and so on, and then they'd be extinguished there. So he was a complete socialist, of course, an elitist socialist. All the top guys who ran the socialist movement at that time were elitists and eugenicists. They didn't believe in the lower class at all. And it's amazing. It's amazing how guys who hated the social classes at the bottom formed an organization to use the people at the bottom, all the labor parties and so on, the Fabian Society. But he hated the working class people, and he wanted to eventually eliminate them all by sterilization and let them all die off. And he wrote about that in his book called A Modern Utopia, in fact. So it goes on and on and on. And again, new normals all the time are to happen. And all social mores and morals were to be changed. Now, it says here, DC introduces the first, that's the comic group, the first transgender character in mainstream comics. And this is once banned from the world of mainstream comic books by the infamous Comics Code Authority, LGBT characters now have a stronger presence in the world of superhero comics than ever before, with gay and lesbian heroes like Batwoman, Northstar, and Green Lantern, and Alan Scott openly declaring who they are and even getting married. This is for books. I think they start reading these things with the age of 5. And so, of course, it's, again, to bring up another generation where anything goes, and anything will go, you see, because the masters have deemed it so. It's quite simple. That's why it's happening. Now, also, I've mentioned before how psychiatry was put to the top there. You can't go completely into the story, but, however, psychiatry was brought out by Freud, and, of course, Freud belonged to a particular group that deemed that all people around them outside the group were technically insane, and that everyone should get measured and tapped for their intelligence and their any mental defects at a very early age, and they would train all societies that this would be the way of the future. Because again, he was a totalitarian, authoritarian character, and he also wanted to destroy all the old existing systems of the Western world and Europe and so on. That was a function of, it was a political objective and a social objective. It wasn't really a psychiatric or medical objective at all. And it's been awfully successful, of course, because people believe in experts, have been trained to believe in experts. Now, here's an article to show you how it's going now. It says, and I mentioned before too, that new normals come across all the time. Psychiatry lost any credibility as a science when it used 100-odd years or more of studies, intense studies on people, certain peoples, and signs and symptoms and so on, and then threw it all at the door on one particular group because of political pressure. Now, when science caves in because of political pressure, there's no science at all. You either stick with your science and say, but this is how it is. I mean, if politics wants to outlaw gravity, it's not going to change the fact that gravity exists, is it? So this is what you're getting, of course, especially in sexual ways too. Once they normalize it, it's no psychiatry. So that here's the latest part as they go towards their final goal, where anything goes. It says, kinky in the bedroom. It says, you're not crazy. People with abnormal sexual interest no longer classified as mentally ill, but only if they're happy with whatever it is that your main thing is, your main kink is. And it goes into spanking in the bedroom and so on, and sexual masochism, fetishism, transvestism, sadism, no longer classified as mental disorders of abnormal or unnatural attraction, according to the American Psychiatric Association. The new edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders has renamed these kinky sexual interests with the word disorder tacked onto the end, a distinction that means a person who must feel personal distress about their interest in order to be classified as a mental disorder. So only if it makes you unhappy with yourself is it a mental disorder. And it says the fifth edition of the manual, the DSM, I like the DSM, it could be sadomasochistic, but anyway, it doesn't matter, will be released in May this year and used by clinicians to diagnose and classify mental disorders, and will state that happy people with kinky interests don't have a mental disorder, except for those who are unhappy in doing it. In 1968, masochism, sadism, transvestism, fetishism were labeled as mental disorders and sexual deviations alongside homosexuality and criminal pedophilia. As American psychiatric consensus has continued to lump non-criminal paraphilias, sexual arousal to objects and situations or individuals that are not considered normative, together with criminal paraphilias as mental disorders. The APA eventually removed general homosexuality from the seventh printing of DSM-2 in 73, but instead introduced a new condition called sexual orientation disturbance, which was SOD, for people in conflict with their homosexuality. In the 1980, the DSM-3 replaced SOD with ego-dystonic homosexuality, but the basic principle remained the same. Happy homosexuals that don't have a mental disorder, well, unhappy ones did. I guess that's why unhappy ones can't say they're gay, right? After a lengthy struggle, all forms of homosexuality, including ego-dystonic homosexuality, were finally removed from the revised DSM-3 in 1987. So that although kinky sexual interests that are considered unusual by society are no longer classified as medically unsound by the APA, for those who are comfortable with their sexuality, some argue that those distressed by their sexual interests are not mentally ill either. Then they go into some of the organizations that are into particular areas of fetishism, and of course they want their things all to be normalized as well. Of course the door is wide open for everybody to get normal. I mean, technically, folks, if a guy's happy flashing in front of children with himself, technically they'll say, well, he's a happy guy, he's a happy flasher, right? So there's nothing wrong with it, right? I mean, the sky's, it's wide open. Sky's the limit. But that's where they're going with it all anyway. Now, again, when you go into this socialistic Soviet-type system that's to be pushed on the world, and remember, too, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and their boys in the US, which they initially called the Council on Foreign Relations. Now they have the CFR across the whole world now, and all governments. They wanted to bring a new type of human being in down the road through science. And in Russia, they called it the Homo Sovieticus, I think they called it. the perfectly trained person, using Pavlovian conditioning and all the rest of it. Well, they're going the whole way today with new mental guidelines for children. Back with more on this after this. Hi folks, we're back, cutting through the matrix, talking about the mental care system or mental health system and how it's not really an authority now. It's getting stepped up to be an authority. And they always, this global system always uses trial countries or trial counties sometimes to try different things out on different people, on select populations. And in the US back in 2007, it says Massachusetts doctors were to offer questionnaires for children on Medicaid. So if, as of Monday, annual checkups for the nearly 500,000 Massachusetts children on Medicaid will carry a new requirement. Doctors must offer simple questionnaires to detect warning signs of possible mental health problems, from autism in toddlers to depression in teens. The checklists vary by age, but ask questions about children's behavior, whether spending more time alone, seeming to have less fun, having trouble sleeping, that are designed to trigger discussion between parent and doctors. The conversations may or may not lead to a referral to a specialist. Over the last several years, such questionnaires have increasingly become the standard of care in pediatric practices and so on. So that was in 2007. And then we go into, I mean, understand this is all going back to Freud, who said they wanted the whole world, especially with the children, start with the children, and they'd retrain the children to be what he would classify as normal, whatever that happens to be. But this article goes on here. This is up in January 2013. Problems can be found before there is gunplay, it says. It says pediatrician Dr. Elsa Stone says children can't enroll in school without a doctor's verification of good health. And many districts also require visits to dentists and eye doctors. It says the Newton School massacres focus attention on dealing with mental health. A key step should be adding mental health screenings to the list of required checkups for very young children. Such screening is rarely done and represents a huge unmet need. Best estimates suggest that fewer than 2% of schools have a systematic mental health screening program. Now, Scotland's another test bed for that too, and I've mentioned it before. And you can go into my archives at cuttingthroughthematrix.com to see how they're doing on every child in Scotland from the age of a few months onwards. It says most perpetrators in a mass shooting suffer from mental illness that could have been identified at a young age. But spree killings are not the only reason to make such a change. Young people with undiagnosed mental illnesses are at higher risk of suicide, more likely to use drugs and alcohol, and twice as likely to drop out. Moreover, since the Columbine High School killings, two reports from the Office of the U.S. Surgeon General have supported making mental health screenings of children routine. So this has always been their goal, the push, to have everyone evaluated. And then if they say there's something wrong, you'll get intensive conditioning routines taught on you until you're drugged, no doubt, as well, until they've got the kind of citizen potential they want you to have. You'll grow up pretty dumb, stupid, and you'll believe all the news you're given, because that's what they're going to do with you. So I'll put this article up tonight too, because this is a big push, and Obama's just allocated another $280 million for this kind of program for children across the US. And once again, it gets back into the state now is in charge of the child. Remember that Julian Huxley, who worked at UNESCO, the brother of Aldous Huxley, they're both globalists, of course. But Julian said that the state really should be in charge of the child and the culture. The parents are contaminated, even if they've been updated to the present, you understand, completely different from their grandparents with the cultures. They're still contaminated with something of the old culture that served its purposes of changing us all to the present. And therefore, the state should give them the new values along with the media and entertainment. And H.G. Wells and Bertrand Russell also said the same thing. So it's pretty well here, folks. It's all here. We're really going through the scientific age, and most folk are completely unaware of it. It's even going on. And then when we go into this article here, it says mental health screening for children column, and it says same thing again. I'll put this one in, plus the one from Obama with the money that he's putting forward towards it to see how they can head off at the pass, so to speak. But remember, too, psychiatry is anything but a really objective in a sense. It's very subjective, and lots of guesswork involved. And, of course, you get different diagnoses about everybody. Even ones that have been cleared by 10 psychiatrists can be caught with another 2 or 3 psychiatrists or give them strange diagnoses. All depends on the personality that's diagnosing you. And that's a fact in psychiatry. So many people have gone in to psychiatrists for videos, making videos and claiming they were with hidden cameras, claiming they were feeling this, that, or whatever. Same symptoms would give to 3 or 4 or 5 psychiatrists, and they'd get diagnosed with different diseases by each psychiatrist and given different drugs. Look at YouTube. This is fantastic. So it's a con game as far as I'm concerned with psychiatry. They're in the dark. But it doesn't matter. They're going to pretend something else because, you see, neuroscience is a new term as you pretend that they've got even more ability to diagnose you by looking at different scans of the brain and all the rest of it. They must bring up neuroscience. This is the big one for psychiatry and behaviorism to get more control over society under the guise of science. You tack science onto anything and people start to believe it. Doesn't matter what it is. Also, I want to mention, too, that in the system that we're living in today, we have philanthropists going to the top of the tree. Articles have come out a few years ago where they say it's time now for big philanthropists to take part in global governance along with the regular governments. Well, we didn't vote for that. And what makes them special to decide our lives just because they're stinking rich? Generally, you don't get rich with a massive crime there somewhere. Back with more after this. Hi folks, we're back cutting through the matrix and questioning why philanthropists, so-called philanthropists, are really just crooks like George Soros, are supposed to help guide us all now and manage and tell governments how to manage their money and so on. This is the guy who boasts he broke the Bank of England when he phoned 2 of his pals up. They manipulated the stock market and crashed the British pound, and they bet on crashing it, and they raked in a lot of cash because of it. Awfully well, more wealthy than he already was. Nobody hung him up for that, you know. Nobody locked him away for that. No, they elevated him to a star status because he did it. Oh, how clever. The guy is a crook. But you see, the world's run by crooks, especially in the area of money. Always has been. And Soros is the perfect type for it. So they elevate him up to stardom, basically, through PR. And now he's advising governments about their money. I'll put a few articles up tonight about that too. He's crazy. He attended the BOA forum in Asia recently, and he's over there right now, in fact, I think, and he's telling China what to do and other countries what to do. He's also told Angela Merkel to start selling euro bonds or get out of the euro altogether and stuff like that. These are little dictators, you see. But again, they're not doing it on their own. The big organization above them has put them there to do what they're doing, obviously, very obviously. Now, getting back to our future, where every child and everybody is going to be, it's not just children, by the way, they want to test you all through your life, maybe twice a year, in fact. This is the big goal of the top socialists, so that the fascists at the top can breathe easy and rest easy at night when they go to their orgies and things. And so neuroscience also goes into neuro law. You see, this is where neuroscience is trying to get into, to start change all the rules and about charging people with crimes and so on, especially specific people like murderers and that. Well, if he's a psychopath, they can't help it. They've already got psychopaths off with it by claiming he can't help it. This scan shows he's got a different mass in the frontal lobe than other people, and he's got a tendency to psychopathy. Well, lots of people have tendencies to psychopathy, but they don't do it. In fact, 2 YouTube videos up there that were the first ones to come out with all the various scans they were doing on it, the 2 psychologists, 2 different videos, these guys didn't even know each other, ended up going through the scan themselves, and they had it. They would be classified as psychopaths themselves. But it doesn't matter, you see. It's to give them credence by pretending that they're scientific so they could elevate psychiatry up and give it more authority over all of us. Anyway, it says neural law from neuroscience changes the landscape of criminal responsibility. It says advances in science could have profound consequences for law and morality. So It says neuroscience evidence can help a defendant establish the necessary elements of an automism defense, and more broadly can influence jurors and judges determining determination of whether a defendant should be held criminally responsible for whatever they've done. Then they give an example, and it gives you one in Canada. It says, early Saturday morning, May 18, 1987, Kenneth Parks rose from his bed, went outside his car, went to drive to the car 20 kilometres from Pickering, East Toronto, to Scarborough, where his mother and father-in-law lived. He arrived there, took the tire iron, and bludgeoned the mother-in-law to death. It nearly killed the father-in-law, too. It says, after the attack, Parks drove to a police station, told police that he thought he had killed someone. He was charged with murder and attempted murder, but he pleaded not guilty, arguing that during the entire time that morning, while driving, while attacking the in-laws, and while speaking to the police, he was asleep. So a year later, a jury agreed. The jury acquitted Parks in part as a result of evidence that electrical signals produced by his brain, as measured by an electroencephalographic machine, were extremely unusual, and further evidence that such readings are, unlike a polygraph, impossible to fake. So now you can find lots of variations when readings in electroencephalograms. And as I say, but anyway, they've used this to get the guy off with it. They got another guy off in the States off with shooting people outside his home and killing them. And so now they're getting this kind of excuse going along. Well, the person can't help what they do. So a guy who murders can't help murdering. Understand where this is all going. Meanwhile, they can grab you and you're perfectly placid and say, well, you're capable of going ahead and committing murder. They might start treating you then by court order. This is what it's all about. It's total control over all of us, all our behaviors, and who to put inside for treatment and mandatorily, and also to make society even more chaotic is to let other ones walk out the door because they were asleep while committing the murder. You understand where it's going? Order out of chaos. And another one too, it says future tense event record. It says, will neural law change the judicial system, and does free will exist? And it goes through more stuff on this and so on. It says, at My Brain Made Me Do It, which is a link I'll put up tonight. This is a future tense event held at the New American Foundation Monday, October 22nd. Scientists, lawyers, and journalists gathered to discuss the mounting use of brain imaging in the courtroom to determine biological origins for crime. Now, you understand eugenicists and sociologists and the Soviet Union always believed that they could change anyone's behavior with the proper Pavlovian-type conditioning. And they still believe that today. They can still change all of us with the right kind of conditioning at an early age, all through our lives, lifelong conditioning. And these boys that are going to the guise of neuroscience want the power to go ahead and do it. And it seems that they're getting it too. So it says, determine biological origins for crime, to detect lies, to mitigate sentencing, and more. According to the panelists, neuroscience won't yet, and never, maybe never will, completely upend the justice system as we know it, but it will only come into play more in the coming years. And it tells you where neuroscience is now, and the different top scientists involved with it, and different cases too. And it says, what should we do with those who might become criminals? Now, this is pre-crime, remember. Pre-crime. This is all part of it. It says Kiel Pope and Gary Marchant, who is Lincoln Professor of Emerging Technologies, Law and Ethics at Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor School of Law, are all intrigued by the idea of developing treatment programs for those with brain scans and personal histories that suggest they are predisposed to criminal behavior. The legal system and some of the tragedies you read about underscore importance of using this technology for prevention, not to put them in jail, but to try to stop it from happening, Marchant said, echoing an argument he made in a Slate piece recently. Says Sally Sattel, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, pointed out that treatment could depend in part on whether there may be an acquired psychopathy versus an innate one, but the panel wasn't sure which flavor might be easier to remedy. Then they go into law and how it's going to affect all kind of law. Now, this is going to be a big, big, big one, folks, because it's going to change the way that you think and so on. And they're going to get you so unbalanced, you won't know if you do have free will or not and stuff like that. That's what it's all meant to do. Just like the Kinsey report was put out to change the whole mores of all sexual behaviour, is put out as an absolute scientific truth. It was all bogus because Kinsey hired prostitutes, male and female prostitutes, as a so-called average American person. And it was into so much kinky stuff. I mean, even hired professional people, they worked for government, by the way, the US government, to literally bugger young babies, not kidding you, with stopwatches to see if they screamed and so on. And then he said that the screams actually were sounds of enjoyment. But it changed the mores. It changed all of the court laws about sexual behavior when it came to court. And so is neuroscience going to do it way beyond that. Way beyond that. Now, another thing, too, I'm going to talk about, too, and I'll put a few articles about neuroscience tonight, remember, too. But also, it says, six officials are held over New York mayoral race bribery scandal. So, there's nothing new in New York about scandals and mayoral races. But it says that two New York State lawmakers are among six officials who've been arrested over an alleged plot to rig the city's mayoral race. As a state senator, Malcolm Smith, and city councilman Dan Halloran were detained at their homes. Smith was attempting to bribe his way on the ballot for a vote November 2013, prosecutors said. Charges include bribery, extortion, as well as wire and mail fraud, according to the criminal complaint. So Smith, a Democrat from the New York borough of Queens, is accused of bribing leaders of local Republican county committees to get the certificates needed to let him run as a Republican. Also charged are Bronx County Republican Party Chairman Joseph Savino, Queens County Republican Party Vice Chairman Vincent Tabon, Naomi Jasmine, Mayor of Spring Valley, New York State, and her deputy Joseph Desmarais. And then you get this came out of it. Says Governor Cuomo proposes new class of public corruption crimes. Because there was so much corruption there, which is normal in New York. It's a gangster place, basically. And it says, he announced today that new legislation, the Public Trust Act, it would create a new class of public corruption crimes and enhance New York prosecutors' ability to crack down on public corruption across the state. Currently, the laws defining public corruption in New York are obsolete and far less effective than federal statutes for prosecuting individuals who commit public corruption crimes. The Public Trust Act announced by the governor today would establish a new class of public corruption crimes and expand the current definitions of public corruption offences to enable prosecutors to hold accountable those who violate public trust. It would be something if that was across the board, right at the federal level too. The law would also impose tougher jail sentences on individuals that misuse public funds and permanently bar those convicted of public corruption offences from holding any elected or civil offence, lobbying, contracting, receiving state funding, or doing business with the state directly or through an organisation. So, that's just New York. But, I mean, this stuff is going on in every big city. In Canada, too, we get that, too. Same kind of stuff. Gangsterism. You understand how much money goes through the hands of mayors, even, for contracts for the state. And the kickbacks it's not normally received for giving them out there to their pals, you know. Now, also, I'm putting out tonight's, this is a Newtown Sandy Hook Community Foundation today announced the release of $4 million to be disbursed by an interim advancement committee to 40 families most severely impacted by Sandy Hook Elementary shooting. The 40 families are those of the 26 victims, the families of 12 surviving children from classrooms directly involved in the shooting, and the families of two people injured in the tragedy. The Interim Advancement Committee will also consider disbursements to address immediate needs of the first responders and teachers and so on. So far, it says they have over $11 million collected for this. And, you know, the way I see the world, it was the same with 9/11 and many big disasters that happened and so on too. Massive money flows in. We've seen it too with the earthquake from Haiti. And then everyone gets involved and all the good folk throw the money out there. And then remember they put, so I think it was Bush and Clinton in charge, Bill Clinton in charge of the charity once it was up and running. And I think none of it went to where it was supposed to go. But you understand too, there's no check on where it really does go. And when I look at these shootings and the money that ends up bringing in, And I wouldn't put it past, when you look at criminality and understand there's really some amazing criminals in the world. They could bring on shootings and make things happen. I'm not kidding about that. And plan ahead that they would be the ones to collect the funds. This is the world we're living in today, folks. It's full of tricks. And sleazy people. Often high up too. In fact, most often high up. Sad to say, but it's true. Also, getting back to morality is changing, of course, and to talk about the diagnostic manual for psychiatry, but culture has been degraded, again, intentionally, step by step, generation by generation. And until literally, there's hardly anything left to change. It's all pretty well in the gutter. But it says Mayor Anthony Weiner. Remember Winnie Weiner, the guy that was photographing his bodily parts and sending them across to certain women and so on. It says he may run for government, for the governor, or for the mayorship, I think it's of New York. And it says a whole New York City mayoral race just got a whole lot more interesting. They call it sext. Scandal-ridden former Congressman Anthony Weiner announced a few paragraphs into a laudatory New York Times magazine profile that he's considering joining the crowded Democratic field. I guess he'd fit right in. It says that could shake up allegiances amongst New York City's political clans, including, this is from the Jewish newspaper that forwarded, including some city Jews. An analyst warned against betting against Weiner, given his potent resume and proven vote-winning prowess. If it hadn't happened, you see, he was going to be right up there. If he hadn't blown it by getting a bit, what would you call it, overconfident. Can you say overconfident? Then I guess he would have been right up there anyway. He was getting groomed for all this kind of work anyway. So anyway, he's thinking of running for it. So he'll fit right in, I guess. There's nothing you can say about that. And also here, there's an act getting passed in Canada. It's called Not Criminally Responsible Reform Act. The government of Canada is committed to protecting victims of crime and to making streets and communities far safer for Canadians. To this end, on February 8, 2013, Minister Stephen Harper announced the introduction of the Not Criminally Responsible Reform Act. The act was tabled by the government this morning in Parliament. The act would ensure that public safety comes first in the decision-making process with respect to accused persons found not criminally responsible on account of mental disorder. We'll wait till the neuroscientists get into it. And enhance the safety of victims and promote greater victim involvement in the criminal code mental disorder regime. So that's going to, again, open the door to a lot of the neuroscientists and psychiatry and massive lobby groups. Because remember, Big Pharma is into the psychoactive drug thing. That's with the big money in that stuff. And then they get their main doctors to lobby government on behalf of neuroscience so they can get in on the act, you see. So that'll be the next step. You see how things work? Step by step. The government puts it out, the pharma responds by massive payouts to these guys, and then the psychiatrists lobby government on behalf of pharma. Then they get in on the act, and rather than protecting the victims, it will change off into let's get these guys off the hook from doing whatever they happen to do. Everything's very predictable in this system because this is where they want to go. They've written about it a long, long time ago, many times over. Also, too, in Australia, they're going the same way with vaccination because Big Pharma, again, is behind it all, too. And they've got government on board with them because they get their own people involved, in fact, on government sometimes out of pharma companies in the high positions to do with vaccination and the national health systems. And it says they're now saying if you don't vaccinate your children, you won't get into school. And the parents of the children should be punished. Back with more after this. Hi, folks. We're back, cutting through the matrix, and we'll take Jolie from North Carolina, if she's still there. Hello?
Hello,
Alan.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to comment on the DC Comics and their introduction of the first transgender character.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be Batgirl's roommate, Alicia Yeo, Y-E-O-H, two Y's in that name. I started looking through on some of the people behind this, one of the co-publishers of DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
He also created the OMAC project. OMAC is an acronym for basically these cyborgs that exist in the DC Comics universe. Uh-huh. And they're cybernetic monsters that inhabit human beings as hosts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to thinking about your Cutting Through series and how all this ties in with the Wanda hermaphroditic agenda and the androgynous agenda and, you know, perfecting that which has been left unperfected, merging male and female into one, and then the interfacing with humans into machines and leading to the brain chip.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. They're heading exactly towards this whole thing. And the androgyny look, of course, is basically being pushed by part of the culture industry, which is fashion. And some of the latest fashion shows apparently have these very skinny, skinny girls up wearing men's suits and so on, and looking, trying to make them look more mannish. So they're trying to and have been for many years, do away with the gender differences altogether, as though it didn't exist. It's quite amazing. It's like saying it doesn't exist. This is what they want you to really eventually believe, and that men are just taught to be men by watching other guys around them, older people, and women simply are given dolls to play with, and that's why they... Now, they're changing all of nature. I mean, guys at the moment can't have children or bear children. Women can. That's the way it's always been. And but these guys literally are going beyond all this and all sanity by saying, no, there's no difference whatsoever. It's just so you can change your gender whenever you want, or even psychologically change it whenever you want, so you can just switch it on and off. I mean, how ludicrous can it be? But this is the big, big, big agenda of those at the top that manage all society. And they know exactly where they're going with all of it. All of it, you know.
Well, you know, there is nothing new under the sun. The corporate logo, DC Comics is owned by Time Warner. Their corporate logo is the all-seeing eye, the eye of Ra.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So we look at the merging of male and female and, you know, that whole ancient religion that you talk about in your books, which has been so helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, they're definitely following it all, too. And they got Disney involved big time as well, departments of Disney. And they also bought one of the big comic guys out, too, I think, the organization's out, too. And they're definitely heading out that way with all the warrior princess type things and warriors and all the latest movies. It's all young female warriors. And again, it's to change society and hope that young girls will start to emulate these new warriors. We're always given the heroes, remember, and these guys know how we tick, how our minds work perfectly well. And it will start working like that too. You'll see women becoming more masculine in their behavior, apart from the fact they're getting dosed with high estrogen content and all their foods and so on. But it actually makes them more aggressive and more masculine when they go over the normal levels. So this is all planned. And again, Charles Galton Darwin said that in the next million years, we shall alter the hormonal structure of both male and females. The males become placid. The women become more aggressive. It's pretty well being done. But thanks for calling. From Hamish, myself from Ontario, Canada, it's good night, Mia. God or your gods, go with you.